Our brown hats, they were dripping as we sailed through the narrows. A new bay and two rivers split by a beachhead. Egrets, they flew past us as we oared to shore, and there was Hudson at the stern. He couldn't wait to touch the ground, jumping in up to his knees. By nightfall, we had built a fire and wrestled on the beach, like the Trojans did when they found their new Ilium. And wasn't Stuyvesant with us too? The time is fuzzy now. Tall as Aeneas, and with his wooden leg, he led us into the woods till we reached this very spot, 24th and Lexington. There was no theater, no dress shops, no delis. No one lived here except for the meadow voles and the white-footed mice and the snapping turtles and even bald eagles and the occasional mountain lion commuting from her cave up in Inwood. It only took us a day to walk the entire girth of this island that blistered our feet with bedrock and marble on which so much could be built, and Peter Minuit buying the whole shebang from the Canarsie Indians for $24. And so we built streets and little Dutch homes and a wharf and a church whose steeple seemed so small against the canopy of red maples just north of Wall Street, where hoary bats shrieked against the dusk and our dawn. This was year one, before the English, before the trains, before the smile she gives you from underneath her umbrella as she window shops in the rain and you're late for some play. Time to sit down. Time to be exactly where you are.
God bless America for all that she stands. But a curse behind her back like an unsatisfied man. And I'm damned if I am, I'm damned if I'm not. I'm the underdog and I just want one shot. Well, Fifth Avenue makes me feel so damn cheap. They got sellers and tellers laid out in the street. And I give them a dime if there's shoes on my feet. I'm the underdog with a heart full of dreams. But tired and lonesome, 2 a.m. ticks and talks. As sirens and lovers echo down the city block. In a race they stumble on apartment 5G. The fires are blazing, I hope you stay warm, I hope you stay free. 'Cause I'm damned if I am, I'm damned if I'm not. I'm the underdog and I just want one shot. I'm damned if I am, I'm damned if I'm not. I'm the underdog and I just want one shot. My coffee pot is empty and my fridge hums along. My mind's in the cupboards and the radio plays a somber song. But there's a picture of you pinned to my wall. And so I'll try again against all the odds. 'Cause I'm damned if I am, I'm damned if I'm not. I'm the underdog and I just want one shot. Against all the odds, forgotten or not, I'm the underdog and I just want one shot.
February in New York is often a cold month, one spent moving back and forth between hot and cold, From the warm embrace of fleece sheets to the sharp reality of an alarm clock and the early gray light shouting through even the blackout curtains of your bedroom window. You moan to yourself and consider snoozing, but this is the Monday that you have sworn to turn a page in your life, to enforce that New Year's resolution to start showing up on time for things. So you get upright, you feel the blood crawl uphill to your brain, and you drag yourself to the chilly tiles on the bathroom floor that Julio said he would retile for the past 6 weeks. Of course, Julio says a lot of things. After dancing on the cold tile floor comes the blast of hot water from the shower head that, come to think of it, has a pretty decent pressure to it. It's comforting that at first morning spray, the heat somehow, when it comes this early in the morning, that comfort doesn't seem earned yet. You dry up, you dart back to the small bedroom you're paying far too much for and shake the shivers off your back as you put on the fuzzier items from your closet. And you think, well, my closet does have a door. I'm not doing so bad. Please welcome our first guest, the lovely and talented Elizabeth Blue.
No one believed me when I claimed that I was going to move to New York City. And really, why should they? Because the whole thing was just totally out of character. I mean, I was all set up to move to a nice little town in the South and be an English teacher, probably do summer stock theater, and get swooped up by like a really outgoing guy who loved Jesus and like kind of guy who started ultimate frisbee leagues and like played really good-natured pranks on his buddies. But something changed in me when I spent this week in New York City visiting my cousin. Just walking around in the village, seeing people who just wore what they wanted to wear, who were whoever it was they wanted to be. They were passionate and they wanted stuff, and I wanted a piece of that pie. So something woke up inside me, and to rationalize the whole thing, I had this whole I want to go be an actress, which was partly true, but deep down I knew really I just had to be in New York. I needed some chance here to break out of this shell that I had somehow become this like really well-mannered, sweet, good girl that was just so limiting. So I didn't believe that I was moving to New York either, really, until I was on the plane flying in and looking down and just seeing all those office buildings and skyscrapers and windows, and behind all of that is just opportunity and possibility and cabs and people on the street that would lead to something great. So my really big opportunity came behind the windows of Borders Books on 32nd and 2nd, very sexy book clerk breaking out. Baby. And this store was just a total madhouse. It was just completely disorganized. Walking through the aisles, it's like you're the person with bread and they're all hungry, just grabbing, just needing these books really bad. And they would never be on the shelves. They would always be in boxes back in the stock room, piled high, and you'd have to go climb through and do this whole safari thing. But I didn't mind. I welcomed any chance to go back there because that is where Brad was. And Brad, he was by all appearances just total bad news, and not just like the tattoos or like the weird piercings and funny places, but like, well, he didn't have a college degree, but he also didn't have a high school degree, and he did have a jail record, and He also had a very shady part-time job, which I didn't know exactly what it was, but he did have to carry these knuckle bars in his very oversized, tough guy jacket. So I don't know how we connected, but somehow we did, and I would walk into the stock room, and he would say, "What do you want?" And I would say, "The Da Vinci Code." And say, "It's over there." Or he might come behind me and just start saying a lot of really vulgar things. And my whole face and body would turn bright red, and I was this push button for him. And he would crack up, and I would be so angry, because here I am still. How did he figure out this good girl thing? Somehow he did. But we just started this weird little friendship thing, and one day he asked me, so how do you get to the train? And I said, "Oh, well, I take the 6 and then I transfer into the ACE." And he said, "Oh, there's a much easier way to go. Let me show you the shortcut." Which I later found out was actually longer, but it was good. And what that became was he asked me if I needed a New York City tour guide, and we began going on all these little adventures after work. We would leave and go in opposite directions so no one knew that we were hanging out or anything. And we would just go, and he'd take me to all these little pockets of Brooklyn that I wouldn't even be able to show you or tell you where it was that we went. And we just slowly were having a lot of fun together. But the days were never long enough. So one day he suggested that, "Why don't you call in sick tomorrow morning, and then we'll meet up." We weren't sleeping over anything like that. It was, "We'll meet up in the morning at like 8 o'clock, and then we'll have the whole day together." And I mean, I didn't even skip school, but I called in that day, and I said, "I have a sore throat." And they didn't believe me. They said, "Okay, all right." And we went, and we had this whole day, and we went all the way down to Coney Island, and we went through the aquarium and saw the sea lions, and we walked through the boardwalk, even though it was freezing cold, and we went and had lunch at a Russian restaurant, even though they tried to kick us out because we weren't Russian. And we ended the day down Brooklyn Promenade, which we had been to once before on our adventures and sat on like different sides of the bench, just not, you know, thinking of things to say. And today we were all huddled up because it was very cold, and we were against the bars, and it was that moment of falling in love, you know. We're just like looking in each other's eyes, just smiling, and it's windy, and that's all that matters, even though it made no sense at all. And someone came by and took a photograph of us, and I thought, "Oh, a nice tourist," or, you know, something. So That was the beginning of this love affair. And the next day we were at work and sitting on different sides of the break table, because of course, why would we still have this cover to keep? And someone opened the Daily News, and the full page picture was Brad and me in our coats, smiling down at each other, couple canoodles on a windy day. And so we just sit there and wait for the consequences. But luckily, he was wearing this ridiculously huge coat, so you couldn't even see his face. And all you could see was my nose, so they just flipped right through. And our cover was not blown. So I didn't lose my good girl rap that day. The relationship actually continued for like over 2 years, and little by little we whittled away at my shell here. And I just look back and I see how eager I was to just break free of this whole innocent thing, but I know without it, I wouldn't have been able to actually fall in love like that, where there's no expectations or demands or real big fears. It was just. And it's really hard to connect with that after you've lost it. And it's the same way of connecting with that love with New York City. And for me, the only way I can get back to that place with the city is when I'm flying back into the city after spending a week in LA, and I look down and I see the buildings and the windows, and there's still much left to conquer or knock on, and I know once again there are so many possibilities, and I can still go down into that big city and make up whoever it is that I want to be.
Thank you. Next up, with an important nugget from the history of this very country, a country in which New York City happens to be a part of, is David Lee Nelson. David.
History is littered with the ghosts of long forgotten people. People whose deeds alter the course of history and change the very foundation of our lives. Decisions made and unmade, actions taken and untaken. One of these giants, these titanic individuals who have walked among us, is our eighth president, Martin Van Buren. As president, he had a lot of firsts. He is the first president from New York. He is the first president born an American citizen, and the first president with hipster sideburns. But the most important thing Martin Van Buren did, the crowning jewel in his lifetime of achievement, was to help pave the way for the founding of the Republican Party. Now, I know what a lot of you are thinking. How can we kill Martin Van Buren? But we have to remember, when the Republicans formed in 1854, they were awesome. It's weird to think of that now. It's like seeing a picture of your grandmother when she was younger and realizing that she was once gorgeous and slutty. But the Republicans were definitely once gorgeous and slutty. They were the party that ended slavery. Remember slavery? The worst thing we've done ever? They were against it. Whenever y'all people talk about how morally bankrupt we are as a country nowadays, I like to think back on slavery. Today, some states have laws allowing you to talk on your cell phone while driving. Some states have laws allowing the sale of fireworks. Back then, some states had laws allowing slavery. And the first Republican president was none other than Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln, the Tom Cruise of presidents. Totally awesome. A winner, and probably gay. Abraham Lincoln, he was shot in a theater. It's shocking to think of that now. A Republican in a theater. For his own part, Martin Van Buren is only moderately anti-slavery. How is a person moderately anti-slavery? They're like, I'm against slavery, but not like terribly against it. So, how did Martin Van Buren, a lifelong Democrat, influence the founding of the Republican Party? Martin Van Buren was, by all accounts, an absolutely terrible president. During his presidency, the U.S. fell into a deep depression. Wild speculation in lands based on easy bank credits swept the West. Hundreds of businesses failed. The press called him Martin Van Ruin, for God's sake. He ran for re-election in 1841, and he lost to a Whig. Remember them? Everyone's favorite party from the past, the Whigs. I always picture them hanging out in powdered wigs, just talking about Whig-type issues. Not that I know what a Whig-type issue is. The Whigs are the party in high school you thought had it all together. The party when you're sitting around and stoned in high school, you're like, oh, you know who's got it all figured out? The fucking Whigs, man, the Whigs. So how did this happen? Through spite. Martin Van Buren changed the course of history through spite. In 1820, Missouri wanted to be a part of our country. And the people of Missouri wanted to be a slave state. The only problem was, A, that would have given the country 12 slave states and 11 free states, and B, owning slaves is douchey. So what did we as a country do? We came up with a Missouri Compromise. And by that, we stood up to Missouri wanting to be continue the plight of human bondage. We stood up to them wanting to do that by creating Maine. That's right. Maine. Our counterattack to creating Missouri, a slave state, was to create Maine, the whitest state. But the Missouri Compromise did one thing. It banned slavery north of the 3630 parallel. North of that line, there was to be no slavery. South of that, well, black people were fucked. So 24 years later, in 1844, having had time to recover from his roller coaster ride in the White House, having cleared the vomit off his shirt, having collected himself, Van Buren regained his courage and decided he wanted to ride that shit again. And by that shit, I mean the presidency. However, the slavery issue had begun to heat up, and Democrats nominated the pro-slavery James K. Polk. 1848, Martin Van Buren decided to run again, and he was again passed over by the Democrats. But this time he said, fuck this. I will not be denied. I will not be called Martin Van Ruin or the Little Dutchman forever. So he left the Democrats and became nominee of the Free Soil Party. The Free Soil Party platform called for the opposition to the extension of slavery, support for national internal improvement programs, support for moderate tariffs and improvements of rivers and harbors. Their campaign slogan was free soil, free speech, free men, free labor. Yeah, they received no electoral votes. In 1854, Kansas wanted to enter the Union, but once again, they had to keep the balance of power equal between free states and slave states. So Congress passed the Kansas-Nebraska Act, which created two states, Kansas and Nebraska, instead of only one. And it said that any future state could decide for themselves whether or not they wanted to be free or slave. That effectively repealed the Missouri Compromise and the 3630 rule. Now black people were fucked all over. After the bill was passed, settlers rushed to the new territories to get there in time to vote. Can you imagine that? The people? What kind of people wanted so badly to have slavery that they were willing to set up everything and move to Kansas? But being so upset about this expansion of slavery to the Western territories, Martin Van Buren's Free Soil Party and other anti-slavery factions joined forces with the Republican Party, and the Republican Party was formed. They adopted Van Buren's slogan as their own, free soil, free men, and free labor. So thank you, Martin Van Buren, New Yorker, hipster, terrible leader, for your role in creating the political infrastructure to help defeat slavery. Because of that, we'll forgive you the whole Rick Santorum thing. Thank you very much.
David Lee Nelson, everybody. Next on the docket is a little film a friend of mine named Matt Moses made about another friend of mine from college, a guy named Sam. Please enjoy.
Well, actually, I got quite a few memories. Yeah, my mom, my dad, and my uncle took me to the Fleet Week. Like, my father and my grandfather, they all served in the military.
In where did they serve?
In Russia. In Russia. Well, my mom, she is from Russia. I was 4 years old, you know, coming to a Fleet Week, and it was really awesome when they saw so many ships and guys in Navy uniform. I was really impressed with that, and I started thinking, you know, when they grow up, you know, I'm going to join the Navy, because I wanted to be like those guys. I thought they were pretty cool. You know, and everybody liked them. Everybody wanted to meet them, take pictures with them, and that's what I like to have. So I was like 14 years old. I had a crush on this Polish girl. Her name was Dara Kiniewinski. But the thing is, I was so shy that I couldn't even bring myself up to tell her that. Eventually she did. Somebody told her that I have feelings for her, but I felt so embarrassed. I decided to join the military when I was 20 years old. I had 2 years of college, and I felt like I wasn't learning anything. And I didn't have a steady job. I had a lot of bills to pay. I came by a recruiter, Navy recruiter, and he told me that, you know, the Navy, if you join the Navy, we, you know, well, besides making good money, you know, it's gonna help you pay for your college. So, you're gonna have an opportunity to travel around the world, and that's what I wanted to do, you know. So it sounds like a good thing for me, you know.
So down on the steps and then out the door you go, and you quickly note the severity of a thing that they call wind chill factor. It's always toughest in the morning in February's, since the most useful stems of transit in this city tend to slide slightly uphill and toward the island center. So to get to your morning job, you've got to move from the coasts of the city inward, and unfortunately, the wind, it seems to have a reverse commute. So you slog against the frosty air traffic on the surface, only to sink yourself beneath the streets to be warmed again by the exhaust and the friction wrought from the steel wheels grinding along the steel tracks as the floating silver fish known only by a letter arrives and then swallows you into its belly. You warm up even more, almost breaking a sweat underneath your new knit cap, as you join the other Jonas and Janes lodged in the belly of one of New York's whales.
He ran and took a leap toward the burrow of dreams with a suitcase and a smile. Fell short of the shore, always looking for more, and darling, he needs you now to find the way. New love, New York. At the corner cafe, she sits and cries over a poem she made, 'cause she lost her words in she downtown train, and she can't recall all the names till she finds New love, New York. On the bottom of the river, he found a loose page from the notebook of her songs. He gathered up her words in the pocket of his jeans to keep them safe for a while. And on a riverside drive, she runs so fast, trying to keep up with her thoughts. When she came across a man with a suitcase and a smile, standing there looking lost, trying to find new love, New York. Trying to find new love, New York. Trying to find new love, New York. Trying to find new love, New York.
Phil Pickens, everybody. So back underneath the earth, the subterranean heat soon fades from your mind as the bing-bong of the train rings and the doors lock their jaws and the whale starts to glide downtown. And it goes just so fast, fast enough to cool your worried heart that maybe today, maybe today you won't slip into the office after the hour. Thank God. Maybe you'll be just on time. You can't take another look from Alice, the receptionist. That aging crow with the thick floral pantsuits and the perfume that calls to mind a Long Island disco circa 1981. Certainly past disco's prime, to be sure, but Long Island always seems to catch wind of things a few years later. But today, with this A train gliding so, so fast, you'll strut right past Alice in reception, look her right into her eye-shadowed eyes, and give a hearty good morning, Alice, in a pitch you didn't even know your voice carried. You may even ask Alice about her weekend, but you won't really listen to her answer. After all, this city is filled with supernumeraries, and only your tightest pals deserve a real listen. This is Chris and Damien, and they come to us from the Bronx Brewery. In fact, they're sporting some of their wares. Well, yes, sure. Yes, please. How are you guys? Settle yourselves
Very
in.
Very good.
So what am I sipping right now?
It's called the Bronx Pale Ale.
This is all you guys are making right now, and you, and is that sort of the mission, to keep it consistent?
Yeah, we tried. I mean, the idea we had was basically to, you know, to make the best beer possible. We wanted to focus on something. We're doing small batches.
Excellent.
Yeah, we want to focus. I think you see a lot of beer companies out there looking at successful companies like Sam Adams or Sierra Nevada. They have a huge portfolio of beers, and they say, well, it worked for them, it'll work for me. And the truth of the matter is that those companies all focus on single beer for a long time, did it well. Because of that success, we're able to introduce new styles.
And then diversify.
Yeah. So we're going to try to focus on this and then introduce some limited run specialty beers.
Excellent. Now, can you describe a little bit of the gestation of the company?
Sure. Damien, why don't you start it off since you were
yeah.
the first?
So my involvement began about a little over two years ago. I was at school at UC Davis studying brewing science. And two guys from the Bronx, Steve O'Sullivan from Riverdale and Niall Henry from Woodlawn, came up with the idea. I think.
Mom, Dad, do you know him? They're here. I'm actually a Bronx. I'm from the Bronx myself. So. But I don't know them, surprisingly.
I just made them up. They don't even exist.
That's cool. Yeah. Anonymous. Yeah,
so they came up with the idea. I know it's not a terribly creative idea to open a brewery in the Bronx called the Bronx. But that was the idea. And
it's to the point.
They very quickly realized that they didn't know anything about making beer. So they reached out to the UC Davis program and said, hey, we're looking for someone that wants to work with us and start the company and be the beer guy.
Oh, cool.
So I moved here and, you know, spent a few months putting together a business plan and small recipes and things of that sort. And the rest is history.
Excellent.
Yeah, so unfortunately, neither of us are independently wealthy, and our other two partners weren't either. So we had to raise a lot of money. And Damien was posting on his alumni board that he was looking for money. My wife saw it. She went to the same school as him. And
I'm sure it's not you.
and said, and at this time, I hadn't met him yet, and I was thinking of starting a brewery of my own. She said, you need to go check out the competition. So I went on like a stealth mission to go check out the competition, met Damien, and discovered he knew how to brew, which I didn't. I used to work for Heineken, but in the marketing side, so.
In South America, is that correct?
In South America. So, yeah, so we partnered up and sort of went from there. And yeah, no, we've been in the market now for 6 months selling beer. And it's funny, you introed us with a discussion about walking into an office and seeing the secretary, and very different from our office. It's two of us basically at our desks looking at each other all day when we're not making beer, so. Yeah. There's no Alice.
One day, get a girl answering the phones. That'll just take you to the next level.
Someday.
You know? Yeah.
Much like the one you described.
Yeah, exactly. An ornery Long Island matron. Yeah, that's the way to go. And why the Bronx? I mean, is it mostly because of Chris and...
It was their idea. Right?
Yeah.
I did not grow up in New York. Yeah. I'd never been to the Bronx until I moved here. So for me, it was sort of a leap of faith. And I thought... You know, it was a great idea. I'd heard of the Bronx, obviously, and I like New York.
Thank you. Yeah, we're trying. Were there any sort of like unforeseen hiccups that were particularly New York to getting it going?
Everything.
Yeah, everything
and nothing. Yeah, you know, from the landlord freaking out on right before and almost canceling the deal to barely being able to raise enough money.
Bought a forklift that lasted about 2 days. We thought we had this great idea to save money on the forklift, and
well, it lasted 2 days every time we got it fixed.
Was it stolen? Oh, it just fell apart.
What are you thinking really of us? We paid paid for it.
No, I didn't think you guys stole it. I thought, like, it said disappear.
We did. We went down to Brooklyn Brewery.
I would never think. I would never bring a thief on this stage. No.
We're not experienced forklift buyers. So.
I got you. Yeah.
We are now.
Yeah. I could have given you advice if we'd known each other before the night. Yeah.
on how to steal it or how to run it?
Yeah, all of it. Yeah, John Deere was my uncle. He's a Bronx native, in fact. Yeah. Didn't know that, because it doesn't exist. Well, any plans for a new brew, or how far down the line might that be?
Like I said, we're doing the pilot batches right now, and we probably did, 8 or 9 batches of the pale ale before we nailed the recipe.
Excellent.
Thought we nailed the recipe. Hopefully you're enjoying it.
Yeah, it's, but, yeah, can I say so, it's citrusy without sounding like an asshole? But it is, in a delicious way.
You should say notes of citrus.
Would you stand behind that? There are notes of citrus?
Yeah.
I mean, it's very clean and crisp as well. Like, it's delicious.
And thank you.
Yeah,
nutty, biscuity, bready.
Excellent.
Citrusy, piney.
Yeah, all of that. Now it's hitting me. Yeah. Well, I encourage you to look for Bronx Brewery beer at any really local food, general beer retailers, anywhere else, guys?
Yeah, there's a lot of places you can check out our website and a bunch of places to have it. You can take it home from places like Whole Foods or the Growler Station.
Excellent. Yeah. Jimmy's number 43, which is probably pretty close.
Jimmy's 43.
It's like half a mile right there, yeah.
And Taproom 307, which is a block away.
Oh, okay. We'll see you there at 11:45. Thanks so much, guys. It was great
having
you. And so you dream on your trip downtown that today will be different. Today will be good. Today will be accomplished. And hell, spring is just around the corner, and we all know what spring does to us. Ah, spring. Ah, life. Oh, shit. Why is the fucking train stopped? What is it? Oh, right. The parade. The motherfucking goddamn parade. And then you wait, and you know that you will, in fact, not be on time this morning. The resolution will have to wait. Alice will win again. For today, on this island in February of the year 2012, hundreds of thousands of men, women, children don mesh blue pullover jerseys and brimmed ball caps sporting two lowercase letters nestled snugly together, the second one flaring off and deciding to underline the pair of characters known in our modern alphabet as NY, for this is the logo of the New York Football Giants. Because further down the aisle, a wealthy mayor of this city awaits the arrival of 50 men, each twice his size, who only 36 hours before bested 50 different men of comparable size on the final game of a football season. The mayor, yes. All right. The mayor will award these dozens of grown men keys to the city that will open no doors beyond the ones to our hearts. For this is the morning they are to float through the Canyon of Heroes. And then you think, heroes? Really? Football players? The canyon was reserved for real heroes, I thought. This is the stretch of Lower Broadway where we celebrated victory over Japan and the end of the Second World War. We've been fighting two wars at once for a decade now. When do those guys get their parade? You hate football anyway. Those commercials and the replays and the timeouts. It's not a sport. It's like watching a chess game in slow motion. You felt that way ever since your salad days in Houston, Texas. The Friday nights where you'd fake your way through chants and cheers just to make it to the after party where you hoped that Henry Smalls, the cute trombone player in the Grayson High Marching Band, would appear before long and grab a chat with you. Even if it didn't end in a kiss just now, a nice long chat with the tall and talented Henry Smalls would be enough to share with your friends for a week. Where are those friends now? Caitlin and Alexis and Andrea. Why did they all just stay back home? Couldn't you have just done that? Or are you stricken with some stubborn ambition gene, always hungry for more, scoffing at mortgages, backyards, and children by 26 years old? People keep telling you the first few years in this city are the toughest, but you're hardly at year one and resting motionless 30 feet underneath the earth, dreaming of the simple life you never wanted, but nevertheless left behind. Speaking of leaving things behind, I'd like to welcome Eloise Aone, Alex Grubbs, and Tommy Crawford with a song about missing Paris while loving NYC.
J'ai deux amours, mon pays et Paris, par toujours, mon cœur est ravi, Manhattan est belle. C'est Paris tout entier. Le voir un jour, c'est mon rêve joli. J'ai deux amours, mon pays et Paris. Manhattan est belle, mais à quoi bon le nier? Ce qui m'en sorcelle, c'est Paris tout entier.
Thank you very much, guys. Eloise Aone, Alex Grubbs, and Tommy Crawford. They're all appearing in These Seven Sicknesses downtown at the Flea Theater through March 4th, I believe. Tickets are limited, but act fast. And let's revisit our friend Sam.
You guys, you don't think I'm being crazy. Well, bottom line is the government is so paranoid, you know. And I think they've been like that ever since President Kennedy got assassinated. Well, I'm thinking about maybe joining the military was a mistake. Because if not, I don't know, I would not be in so much pain right now. Yeah, I mean, because I mean, I miss Dre. I mean, that's like, and the reason we can't be together because some big brother is being so fucking paranoid. I mean, and when is that gonna stop? I don't know what I'm gonna do. I don't know. Happy story when she asked me to dance for her, and she really liked it. She told me, you know, I'm the greatest dancer in the world. You know, I did some hip hop like this.
Wait, hold on.
because you see, all my life, when I was young, I was trying to dance, impress the girls. They were laughing at me and said, you know, I'm a loser and all. But not Dre. She really liked my dancing. And what do you guys think? What do you guys think? No more dancing. The top officer of the entire Naval Reserve. And he gave me his personal coin, and I gave it to Drea. I saw, you know, like the eyes shining in her, you know, and her face lighted up, so. Yeah. It says, you know, Chief of Naval Reserve. Because he's a Chief of Naval Reserve, he has his own personal coin. That's because, you know, I was such a good sailor, you know, I did a very excellent job. You all people have their own gifts, and they need to figure out how to use them. Like, one person, you know, he has artistic personality, you know, another one is, you know, is a deep thinker, you know, so you could, you need to be aware of the gifts that you have and work on them, you know. See how you can better yourself and how you contribute to society with those gifts.
And now I'm going to ask Phil to please send us out with his final song.
We can walk to the moon, paint stars in the sky, float down the river, singing a chaste lullaby. Oh, my Caroline, it ain't easy. Oh, my Caroline, don't be so fast. You can almost feel the current, and the moon is shining bright like a flashlight under covers. We whisper secrets by the riverside, 'cause these days are not numbered. So please forget the time, no need to worry. When you got me by your side, and oh my Caroline, it ain't easy.
I'd like to thank everybody for coming out. I'd like to thank the People's Improv Theater for hosting us, Gertjan Hubin, Slant Theater Project, Gardner Comfort, please join us on the stage, artists, Elizabeth Blue, Chad Hepner, please, David Lee Nelson, Matt Moses, Sam Takach, the boys from the Bronx Brewery, Phil Pickens, everybody on guitar, Eloise Aonay, Alex Grubbs, and Tommy Crawford. I'm Matt Delapina. It has been my pleasure.
My Caroline, it ain't easy. And oh, my Caroline, don't be so fast.
Thank you, everybody. Thanks, guys.
All right.